And welcome to another edition of, for this one, the Rona stops here. I got the first vaccine. If you haven't, hang in there. You will. And if you don't want it, that's your choice. But man, I feel a little bit better finally getting it. We got a great podcast for you today. It officially is The Rock Stops Here. Now, I'm going to do my best to bring you A-listers in the world of sports, entertainment, just somebody that's interesting. And this guy today that's on this podcast is my best friend. We work together covering sports in Tampa Bay. Now, if you're not from the Tampa Bay area, I think you're going to enjoy it because we tell some stories that have never been told before, behind-the-scenes stuff and letting it fly. We got into quite a bit of shenanigans over the years. We were on different stations. There was a time where we were on the same station in Tampa Bay, but we traveled together. Even though he was at a radio station, I was at a TV station. We went to Philadelphia for the World Series. We went to Boston for the ALCS. We went to Tokyo, Japan for the Yankees and the Rays. We went to San Diego for the Super Bowl, the Bucks and the Oakland Raiders. We went to Calgary for the Calgary Flames, Tampa Bay Lightning, Stanley Cup Finals. We got into all kinds of stuff behind the scenes, and I think you're going to enjoy it. It's going to be just fun. You know, enough of this like seriousness. Let's have some fun. Fun. Now, I did have a good time going to a live event, an NHL game. The Lightning and the Chicago Blackhawks. I went to one game prior to this, and now they're letting in fans. Not a lot. I honestly think they could probably allow a little bit more in, and it's really spaced out. It seemed to me there were more fans on the third level, the higher level, than there were in the second or the first level. But it's, you know, they space it out. The one thing, though, is, see, here's the thing. They're trying. You got to take baby steps. It's almost like anything. You're not going to achieve success right away in anything. Am I right? There is no shortcut. You got to start out just like this podcast. I ain't going to be Joe Rogan right away, you know, far from it. You know, I got to be known outside of the Tampa Bay area. And even that, you know, I understand, but it's a commitment. I'm committed. Thank you. If you've been listening and share it, and we got to just spread the word, and I try to have fun, and let's say, you know, here we go. And as a matter of fact, Joe Rogan, when I was sitting there in the press box, everything is partitioned off with these plexiglass. Everybody is spaced out. There's a yellow zone or a red zone or a green zone, and you just walk here and nobody, you know, there's no mingling. There's no big dining hall. You know, everything is just so different. But you know what? Everybody was respectful. And the fans that I saw at this game, everybody was respectful. Now, when you're eating, you're allowed to take your mask down, but I saw a lot of people when they were done eating and families and things like that, they put the mask back on. Everybody was really respectful. It was good to see. But they made an announcement at the game, the Lightning game, coming, it's this summer. I wish I remember the date. I wrote it down somewhere. Joe Rogan, who has one of the highest rated podcasts, Joe Rogan and his podcast. He is coming to Amalie Arena in Tampa to do his stand-up comedy. I know he moved to Austin, but everybody wants to be Joe Rogan, but I know it doesn't happen like that overnight, man. And he's worked hard to get to that level. What I did notice, though, when you allow, now, the Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay, where the Lightning play, they've sold out for years. Seriously. Something like 14,000 season ticket holders. And then you got another 4,500 walk up every single night pre-pandemic. So they're allowing in only 3,500 maybe, something like that when it seats 19,500. But in the third level, the upper level, I walked all around just to check it out. There's a lot of vendors that normally would be at this arena that figure it's not worth their time to bring in their food, staff it. You know, they'll wait till you get more fans. So the lines are pretty darn stinking long to get a drink, to get something to eat. You see what I mean? Because there's not many options. But Emily Arena looks great. It's a start. And we're getting there. We're getting there. WrestleMania will be held. It's going to be a two-day event here in Tampa, Florida. They're going to have pretty much the same 36, 37, 38%, something like that, at Raymond James Stadium. That's where the Super Bowl was held. They had 38% for the Super Bowl. They're going to do the same thing at WrestleMania, but it's going to be a two-night deal. So it's going to be somewhere around 25,000, 25,000 allowed. That's outdoor. And, you know, speaking of that, it's funny. I've been over to Clearwater Beach. That's the home of the, hey, brother, Hulk Hogan and Hogan's Hangout. He's got Hogan's Beach Shop. He's got a store run by Ronnie. And I went there because I saw Jimmy Hart was going to be there. Remember Jimmy Hart? Mouth of the South. Hey, Rock. Hey, how you doing? Doing great, Jimmy. You? Jimmy, I had a gallbladder. You did? A friend of mine just had that. Boy, it was something. Yeah, let me tell you. He gets a call. He's signing autographs. And people come in. He loves the people. Jimmy Hart looks fantastic, by the way. He is 70. Could he possibly be? I don't think he's 70. No, he's not 78. He's in his 70s, and he looks fantastic. Like his skin and no wrinkles, and it's amazing. It's amazing. He got a call. Hold on here. Let me talk to you. And he is going to be on the podcast. So, Jimmy, can you do it, man? What about this week? He goes, well, we got to wait till after WrestleMania because Vince, he's so concerned about Vince, you know, he doesn't want to upset the apple cart. He's going to be involved. Hulk Hogan and Titus O'Neil from Tampa Bay are going to be kind of the host for WrestleMania. But I know all those guys and I have a good relationship with them. And so we were chatting for a while. As a matter of fact, Hulk called while I was there, just checking in with the man who runs Hogan's Beach Shop, Ronnie, and I was going to try to get my man Hulk on, but right now Hulk Hogan with Vince and the WWE and WrestleMania, you know what I mean? I tried about 6 months ago, and his guy goes, Rock, if he does one, he does every, everyone wants him to be on this podcast. Stone Cold called the other day, and he's like, you know, and he eventually did do Stone Cold, but anyway, I digress. Jimmy Hart will be coming on. Brian Nasty Boy Knobs, he used to be on the tag team with his buddy Sags. He'll be coming on. He is a character. He's one. You ever get a friend that even though it's 2021 and you haven't talked to in a while and you text? Nah, he wants to call. He is old school. And I actually appreciate that. But I texted him. He called me back. And it must have been 20 minutes in a parking lot at Burlington Close, where I was in a parking lot, walking the parking lot, and he's bringing up this and that story. Remember this? What about this? What about that? But how's your daughter getting big? I mean, he's a good dude. One of those friends that just wants to talk on the phone and not text. So, well, I tell you what. Why don't we do this? Without further ado, and I'll tell you about the vaccine. If you haven't had your first shot, the place where I went, fantastic. Fantastic. They had it running like a machine. It was great. It was no problem. I got a tip with the arm. I'll tell you about that. Let me get into this one. He's Whitney Johnson. He is, when Sports Talk started, WFAN in New York was the first, I believe they were the first station. I was living in New Jersey and working in media, young guy. I remember when they came on. And I think they were the first. He worked, this Whitney Johnson, he worked in the first station in Florida, all sports station. He worked for the Fabulous Sports Babe. He's been in it a long time. And these are some great stories, man. So even if you don't know Whitney J, I think you're going to enjoy this. And oh, let me set this up. So we go over to his house. He and his lovely wife, he had this house before he got married. They've done a lot of renovations to it. And their backyard is basically, it's like no backyard you've ever seen. He's got the Grateful Shed. He's seen so many Grateful Dead concerts. We did it in the Grateful Shed. His yard, peace and love, It's hard to explain. I'll tell you what, I'm going to pop a couple of pictures. Follow me on my social media. I'm Real Rock Riley. So on Twitter, at Real Rock Riley, Instagram, at Real Rock Riley, Facebook, Rock Riley. All right? And I'll pop a couple of pictures. He's got lawnmowers. He's got equipment. We moved it out of the way, the Grateful Shed. That's where I sat down with Whitney J. Johnston. Enjoy. All right, Jay Bird, we are recording in your Grateful Shed, and even we're doing with a cold one, and I guess we're just like your favorite broadcaster, Joe Buck.
That's the way to start the show. I started off with a joke.
I was driving here, and I said I got to start. Joe Buck drives Whitney crazy. Jay Bird, Whitney Johnson, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. Very, very well. Very well. I was doing some research on this before you came here, and I saw that your podcast talks about people that made it to the top.
Yes.
So, of course, that question is, why me? You know?
You did make it to the top in broadcasting. You were on the number one sports station in Tampa Bay. You covered Super Bowls. You went to Japan, World Series, Stanley Cup playoffs. I would say that you made it to the top. You're being very humble, Whitney Johnson.
A small fish in a small town, but we were talking about this with the Bucks winning the Super Bowl and how, in the last year, with the Lightning and the Stanley Cup and the Rays and the World Series again, and how everybody was going crazy. But there was something super duper special about the first time that all happened. The Lightning winning the Cup, the Rays going to World Series, the Bucks winning the Super Bowl. There was something special about that whole era, about the people involved. You know, you look at Chucky, you look at Tortorella, you look at Joe Maddon, the players, yourself included, you were a big part of that. You know, Bay News 9, we still miss that. I still missed 11 o'clock, you're not having a sports show. That drives me nuts. Uh-huh. And but it was a special time, I think, and the people really made it happen. And that was exciting. That can never be replicated.
You know what? Now, again, we're all across the nation, and we are broadcasting from Tampa Bay and talking about, you know, the success of their teams. What did were you just yourself? You were very popular with a lot of the players. The coaches, they seemed to gravitate to you. Was it a philosophy that you had when you were out in the field and doing interviews every day, or were you just being yourself and that's how you are?
Well, I learned a lesson early from my dad, and I don't know where he got it from, but he always said, treat famous people like they're regular and treat regular people like they're famous. And I think the point he wanted me to get from that is treat everybody, regular people, like they're famous, you know, like they're... Just treat everybody well and how you want to be, like the golden rule. And that always stayed with me. And, you know, the first press conference you go to and there's, you know, Ray Perkins, you know, these, you know, Broderick Thomas, Vinny Testaverde, you know, your early first press conferences. And you're like holding a microphone and you're like, oh, my God, these guys are superstars. And then you said, all right, you know, you're talking to them. You're like, hey, man, how you doing? And they're like, all right. You know, and you're like, hey, did you see Cheers last night? And they're like, yeah, man. You know, like something that bring the even, you know, playing ground. Because, you know, what are you going to talk to? And I always get a kick out of this. You know, all these sports catchers. Vinny, you threw the Y pattern there and you saw the blitz picking up. And, you know, you can see like the players look at him like, what are you, some kind of moron? You know, get out of here. But anyway, I think the whole thing was just try to treat people. You know, like we're all in this together, you know, and treat people like I said, you know, the famous people like the regular people like the famous, and you'll get by. And I think that was a good philosophy that I learned from my father.
Now, you know, there's a couple of behind the scenes stories that I just love. And I want to start at the top with Joe Maddon. Joe Maddon, who won a World Series as the manager with the Chicago Cubs. He's now in Anaheim with the Angels, and he had been with the Angels a long time. But when he came here with the Devil Rays, the Rays, he changed it with the front office. They didn't have the money. And when they were making that run, and for those of you, to give you a little background, when you get into the playoffs, whether it's NFL, the league takes over and more media comes in. These press conferences are no longer in their office. They're at a podium and there's a lot of media there. And before every press conference on that run to the World Series, Joe Maddon would always say, all right, first question, where's Whitney? He would never start. What was it with you and Joe Maddon? You just had a kindred spirit, man? You connected? What was it, Jay?
I think what it was being a beat reporter for the Rays during the time when they were playing Kansas City in the middle of August, and they're, you know, 15 games out, and there's, you know, 5,000 people in the Trop, and you were there, you know, asking questions after the game. It was the beat report. You were there every game. And I think it all came through with loyalty is the word. He was loyal to his hometown guys. And of course, we always talk music. He was a big music guy. And, you know, it was always funny after the, you know, after the cameras to turn the lights off and everybody left, and he would stay around Joe's office, and, you know, he would, you know, maybe drop a couple of swear words, and you would drop them back because you were just talking regular. Like, can you believe that guy hit the living crap out of the ball? You know, what the hell happened there, you know? But I think, you know, we connected on music, and I think he just got it that, you know, we were there every day, and I wasn't out to get the dirt, you know, on him. And, you know, plus it's one other thing too, when people tell you stuff off the record and you don't say it, and they know that I could have said it on different things, and you don't say it, and they don't hear it. And that, you know, so it's, I think that was a big factor too. But anyway, I think it was Joe just being loyal, to his hometown guys on that trip around the country with, you know, going to Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia. And it was so funny. It was that one lady that was in charge of the American League. I cannot remember her name, but she was a big wig. She was always
major
league, with
game. Major League Baseball.
Right. She was a big wig, and she would be, you know, setting up our mics and putting the cords in and trying to, you know, after and all I'd hear over the microphone is like, you know, you tap, 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 test, test. Where's Whitney? Phyllis, somebody.
Yes, it was Phyllis.
And
Phillips,
she would go,
right.
Where's Whitney? And I'd have to raise my hand, and she would tell the guy with the microphone to come over, because Joe was going to, I had to ask the first question. And the one funny thing I remember from that was I couldn't make it up to Philadelphia the first game. I think I was in I made it for the first game, but not the first press conference. And he goes, you know, Joe, when we left the Trop, he goes, you're going to be there tomorrow? I said, I can't, my flight lands at 6, you know, because the press conference is at, you know, 12 or whatever. And he said, what are we going to do? And we sat in his office, and he was like, I can write a question and say that I asked. He goes, that's it.
That's hysterical.
So he wrote down a question, and it was.
Really?
Yeah. He grew up.
I don't remember this
he
story.
He grew up in northern Hazleton,
Pennsylvania.
And
yeah.
I said, all right, here's the question I would ask you. I said, growing up in Hazleton, did you ever go down to Philadelphia to the Tower Theater or the Spectrum and see Springsteen? Because he was a, you know, huge Bruce fan. And he goes, that's it. And he had Chris, you know, the PR guy write the question down. And they said it, because it's in the transcripts. And he asked himself a question on that. And then at the end, you know, it was kind of goofy, because, you know, sometimes you weren't under pressure to think of something, because, you know, you always had something that was kind of, you know, a question in the World Series. You didn't try to make it goofy all the time. Sometimes, you know, you had to be a little serious, you know, hey, so-and-so got hurt. What's the status on him or whatever? But the last, after they lost to Philadelphia, and, you know, we were talking about the Rolling Stones a lot of times, because he said he listened to the Stones a lot before the game to get them pumped up. And this question just popped into my head, I'm like, wow, that's a good question. I said, after they lost the World Series, you know, 20 minutes afterwards, you're talking to them. And I said, Skip, what Rolling Stones song describes your mood right now? Happy or shattered? And you could see him just kind of look up and go, oh, happy, man. Happy. And then he went off on his thing. You know?
Wow,
and
that was probably like such a relief for him to just, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
But he was just a great guy. I still, once in a blue moon, I haven't talked to him, I text him. I haven't talked to him in a long time, since I think he went to California. I always wish him, like, Thanksgiving and Christmas, I'd always say happy, you know, Thanksgiving to your family. He would text back.
Nice.
Same thing to you.
Nice.
And, but, maybe I'll text him today after the show.
There you go. You know, speaking of some of the guys that you covered and managers and coaches, what about in the NHL, John Tortorella? Now, John Tortorella is known for having a temper. We've seen some video of that at times with him with the media.
Yeah.
You got along with him pretty darn good, did you not, Torts?
I don't know why, but I love that guy. I love Torts. To this day, I love him. He came into the radio station when he got hired, and, you know, the big dog, the late Steve Dumig, and they, you know, came in there when he first time, and he sat in there, and I was doing my updates, and I always try to make a, you know, throw a joke in one update. You know, I took him very seriously, the updates, you know, because you're tuning in, you want to know the scores, you want to know who's hurt, you want to know. So I included that, but I like to throw a little joke in there, just a one little liner. And I saw him like chuckle a couple of times. And then I was covering the Rays extensively at that point. So I wasn't getting over to many hockey games. So then the Lightning made the playoffs. I go to see him, and, you know, I'm standing there, and I go back into the room afterwards, kind of edit my tape, send tape back to the station. And was it Jay Preble, the Lightning PR guy? Uh-huh. Was waiting. I look up. He goes, "Come here. Torts wants to see you."
Oh, boy.
And I'm thinking, oh, boy. Did I ask a stupid question?
Right, right.
You know? And so I go in his office, and he goes, "Whitney," stood up. He goes, he puts his hand. He goes, "I don't know if we've ever met." I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "You came into our studio when you first got hired, but that was like a couple years ago, probably like a year or two ago." And he goes, "How the hell do you get away with saying some of the stuff you do?" And he started laughing. And I go, "What?" He goes, "Man, you had me laughing. He almost drove off the road the other day." Because a lot of double entendres, you know. I remember we used to say it all the time, like, you know. You know, the picture, you know, there was, you know, more balls than a party at Elton John's house or something like that. You know? Something like that. And he just started, you know, wanted to know about how I got involved in radio. And I mean, he goes to me, "Anything you need from me, you let me know." And he writes down his phone number. This is during that Stanley Cup run.
That is awesome.
And so needless to say, during the rest of the time, you know, he tried to ask an intelligent question to him because he did not suffer fools. Easily, he would, you know, if you asked a dumb question, he would let you know, you know. So he tried to, I always try to make it about the players. You know, like Dan Boyle was like the unsung hero last night at a game tonight. He's like, "Oh, yeah, when he took that, blocked that shot, you know." Or
you were setting him up.
But he was just such and he always, then, you know, of course, I don't know if you remember when we went to Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
Which I just found two pictures,
awesome.
Gang. I found two pictures of Rock and myself in our hotel room before when the night started, and we're both standing there with a beer in our hands. And then it's like 4 hours later, we're both standing there. Rock, your eyes are shut. I'm got like looking cross-eyed.
Oh, I want to see that picture.
But it was that was a day when we went to Calgary and went down to the liquor store, and that was the first time I'd ever seen a 30-pack. And we bought it.
I don't remember that. I remember us in Calgary. I remember us partying.
Labatt's that we're drinking right now.
We got a Labatt's
we
right
got
now.
We bought a 30. I'd never seen that before.
I don't remember that, buddy.
And went back to the... So I'm walking back to the hotel. It's like a block away. You know, I was by myself. And I walk back, and all of a sudden, here come the Lightning out of the hotel. They're all dressed in suits. They're getting on. They're going to dinner.
Yeah.
You know, the guys, some of the guys, you know, yeah. Vinny and, you know, "Hey, Winnie, hey, Winnie." You know, not everybody knew your name. You know, "Hey, Winnie, hey." Andrew Chuck, "Hey, Winnie. Look at you," you know? And all of a sudden, Jay Feaster comes out, and he goes, "Oh, my God." I said, "Look at this, Jay." I said, "Canada's great." I said, "I never seen a 30-pack of beer before." He goes, I got to get Torch. And Torch comes over, and I go, "Come up to the room." I said, "Yeah, I think I even mentioned your name." I said, "Rock and I will be having a couple beers later." And he goes, "I don't know, man." I said, "Coach, I just want to say this has been the best experience. I just want to thank you so much for," and he goes, "We're not done yet."
And I said, I know.
Oh,
I believe it.
This is like the game before game, six, where Marty tied it up.
Yes.
You know, up there.
Yes.
And he goes, "We're not done yet." And I said, I know. And then after that, you know, I mean, I just love that guy because he doesn't take any BS. You know, I love that. Some people play the game or whatever, but he didn't take any BS. And I love that guy.
That was cool. That trip to Calgary was so neat. Did you get a chance to go to Banff? I did not.
Yeah,
did you?
Banff,
you did.
I would go there again tomorrow. That place was beautiful. Jason Dixon, a big wig at XM Radio now, right?
Yes. Seriously.
We took the gondola up to the top of the mountain. On the bottom of the mountain, it was beautiful. We got to the top. It was snowing.
Wow.
And I started shaking it. And he stopped
freaking out.
But it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And I just popped into my head about that trip. Remember Phil Esposito?
I just saw Phil the other day.
Remember Phil? When he said, "Hey,
what
you guys,
did he say? I remember."
He goes, "You guys, what are you guys doing tonight?" And so we're probably just going to, get a beer or something like that. He goes, "Will you call me?" And we're like, okay. So we're doing our thing. You and I are having a couple beers. I think we went out in town a little bit. And the next day I see Phil and he's like, "What the hell? You guys never called me."
No,
and I'm thinking, Here's a Hall of Fame hockey player at the Stanley Cup. All his buddies are here. You know, doesn't he want to hang with these guys?
With us, Jags? With
he
wants to hang with us?
He goes, you guys didn't call me. What the blank? You know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I can't leave this room. He goes, I walk outside, I'm mobbed. Because he's such a superstar. And, you know, in Canada. So that's, he goes, I can't leave the room. You guys didn't call me. Man, sorry, you know, next time.
He loved you. And I just saw him, Jake. It's funny you're bringing this up. I just saw him. I went to a hockey game the other night. It was so strange with no fans. It's so strange. Anyway, I saw Phil. And I said to Phil, and I had this in my mind, get him on the podcast. And I said, hey, he goes, hey, Rock. And I hadn't seen him in a while. And he gave me a fist bump. And I said, hey, Phil. You think you could do my podcast? And you know, Phil, he turns around and he goes, God damn, you guys in your damn podcast? He must get bombarded. And he goes, no, listen, for you, you're here. But God dang, Canada. God dang. So one of the guys that does broadcasting for the Lightning Radio Network, he's right there and he was laughing. And I said, no, Phil, I didn't, Phil. He goes, and he goes to sit down next to Dave. And the other guy looks over and he goes, royalty. I said, I just asked him to do a podcast. He goes, oh, because they must know.
Right.
But didn't Phil, the great Phil Esposito, was it the Frightening? Didn't great Phil Esposito, when he came down to Tampa, he was the Lightning founder. And when you were working at a radio station, weren't you in like a celebrity hockey game?
Yes.
And wasn't he busting your chops or something? Because you really hadn't. Please tell that story.
If this is on TV, you would see a scar on my knee. And that's from playing hockey when I was in Kenville, New Jersey. Fell on the ice, tore cartilage in my knee.
I didn't know that.
So after that, I was a terrible skater to begin with because I was the youngest of five kids. We didn't have a lot of money for ice skates, and they got the hand-me-downs. So by the time I got them from my brothers, three brothers, they were all slit, held together with duct tape, you know. So I wasn't that good skater to begin with, but it was an accident. I mean, I just fell on the ice wrong and tore cartilage. So I never played hockey, so I never watched it.
Right.
You know, it was one of those games you couldn't play, so you weren't interested. Fast forward how many years, decades, and here's the Lightning forming. And Phil Esposito walking in a radio station the first time, and you're like, holy crap.
Phil Esposito.
And was just
one of the greatest players
of all time. Right off the bat. He came in the first day, like, oh, it was my brother's birthday. I'm all hungover. I said, Phil, you want me to go across the street? There's a gas station. I go, I can go get a six-pack. He goes, would you? I said, yeah. And then he goes, nah. He goes, it was like his first interview. And he goes, nah, I better not.
Lightning,
I said, all right.
Founder, you were going to get him a six-pack from the gas station.
Yeah, maybe that's why we got along afterwards. And then, so we had a charity hockey game, and it was a Tampa Bay Frightening. That was they had a league team, and it was made up. But we got a team, and we were going to make it with our listeners. But one of the listeners was the captain of the USF hockey team.
Awesome.
So he goes, I can get like five or six of my guys, so you're not going to look like a bunch of schmoes.
Oh.
I said, do it. So they came out. I think we had Roy Cummings, who was a Tampa Tribune writer, myself, the big dog, the late Steve Dumig. And then the rest were like...
Ringers.
But the Lightning, they come out that first game. Phil Esposito, Terry Crisp, Ron Duguay.
Get the hell out of here.
And his girlfriend at the time, or maybe wife, I shouldn't say that. Kim Alexis.
Yes, supermodel. I remember that. They were always on the back page of the New York News.
Beautiful woman.
Yes,
and the night before was the final episode of Cheers, and she was on it.
Oh.
And so we go out to drop the puck. So I'm standing there. Oh, first of all, I had no pads. I had a pair of tie-dye gym shorts and orange sweatpants.
Whitney loves the Grateful Dead, by the way, so that makes sense.
So I had orange sweatpants from the Bucks, just a pair of pants. No pads.
Oh, shit.
Gloves that the guy gave us. We had USF shirts. And so I'm standing there like a dodo. And all of a sudden I hear, Whitney. And a crowd. There was a crowd there at the ice. It was a big crowd. It was probably a couple hundred people. Maybe 1,000 or so. And he goes, get up. You're dropping the puck. And I'm like skating up like with one leg because I'm a terrible skater. And he goes, you put this whole thing together. You're taking the face off. And Kim Alexis dropped the puck. And I go to her before she, I go, hey, you were great on Cheers last night. She goes, oh, did you see that? I'm like, yeah. I go, boy, you did a great job there. That was so nice. How was that exciting? And Phil goes, will you shut up and drop the puck? So he dropped the puck and I won the face off against him. And he looked up. I mean, I hit it and I looked up and he went like,
This was against Phil?
Against Phil Esposito.
You got to be kidding me.
I'm putting that on my grave.
That's awesome.
Won a face-off against Phil Esposito. And so anyway, he sees how terrible I can barely stand on these skates, Rock. My father came down. My brothers were there. Everyone's laughing because I could hardly skate, you know, because I was a terrible skater. And 1 minute into the game, he calls me over. Whitney, get over here. And I say to myself, he's going to tell me to get off the ice because I'm going to hurt myself. He calls me, goes, next time I'm on the ice, we're together, you steal a puck from me and you score. He calls his goalie over and says, this guy's scoring on you. That he goes, the crowd will go nuts. So that just shows you what kind of a showman he was.
Yes.
And he goes, so sure enough, bam, 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 and I go to shoot the puck. The goalie blocks it, you know, probably just out of habit. Phil starts yelling at him. So I shoot the puck again. It hits the post. He throws the puck back out. He goes, you score already. I shoot the puck. The crowd goes nuts. And we raised a lot of money for charity, which was very cool. But that was fun. We did another game later on, too, which was fun. But that again, like we said before, the first one was just very special.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it was funny, too. I remember Roy Cummings, he's the hockey writer.
Yes.
And he tried to do a little like deke on Terry Crisp or did something. And they ran him into the boards.
I said, boy, they don't like that, man. Hammered. You ain't going to show up there.
I can still see him. Like, and he was like, some of the players trying to get Terry Crisp, you know, he's up against the board, and he's just like holding them off and just laughing like, you're not going to get the puck.
That's
off me. You know?
So, well, so times. Cool.
Good times.
One of my favorite trips was with you when we were lucky enough to go to Japan to cover the Devil Rays and the New York Yankees. And back at that time, they actually opened the Major League Baseball season. I think it was a 2-game series against the Yankees and the Rays. And then the Yankees played 2 Japanese teams. The Rays played 2 Japanese teams. We were fortunate enough to travel on the Rays plane from Tampa, a stop in San Francisco, and then over to Japan. Was that not the coolest trip ever to Tokyo?
Was that a culture difference?
Oh my God!
Because of the players on the plane, it was like traveling with the Rolling Stones. These guys, everybody had their own row.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that plane got in the air and the seatbelt thing came off, all those players went in the back and started playing cards.
Yes.
And the sugar packs were, they didn't play with money, but they played with sugar packs with their number on them. And I guess at each was $50 or $100. I mean, it was big money stakes. And then one guy lost, I forget, I said, how much? He goes, you just lost $8,000. And they played some kind of crazy game where it was like every other card was like wild. So, you know, it was just a crazy game. But those guys were just, and it was just a nonstop party. We drank all the beer, I think, by the time we got to San Francisco.
I drank so many beers.
And we only
trip.
Had it, I think, from Frisco to Japan, all I had was sake left. Remember that?
Well, I
remember you getting off the plane in San Francisco.
Go ahead.
And
please.
We're, you know, went in, of course, and I think they had to refuel, so they let everybody off the plane, and we probably went and got a beer somewhere, and I come back. I said, all right, you know, let me pay up, Rocco. I'll meet you on the plane. Bye-bye. I look down, and there's your jacket laying on a chair where we were sitting. You know, I went over to leave a tip. I go, wait a minute, Rock's jacket. So I pick it up and just make sure it's, you know, I look and there's a wall. Your passport was in there.
No, I don't remember that. I thought you were going to tell us the other story about my pants.
Oh, well, I was going to get to that.
I don't even remember this other story.
Yeah.
I drank so many beers.
We're going up the escalator and Rock's pants split. And I go, Rock, this isn't a place to have your backside hanging up. But
and I'm like, there's no way I can change. Imagine that when your pants are split wide open and you're going to Tokyo, you're in San Francisco and you can't get to your luggage. You're stuck.
Right.
I remember you were busting my chops so much. We're in San Francisco.
I got on the plane and and you look up and I threw the jacket at you. And I'm like, straighten up.
No, I didn't know. I don't remember that.
Yes.
Thank you. Seriously? Yeah. My passport was in there?
Passport, everything.
Damn.
And then we get to Japan, of course, and that was just an insane...
I was scared. I was scared because...
A couple of times walking around, I got lost.
I tried
to walk to the stadium the one time, or walk back. And, you know, I knew that there was record stores, so I was trying to find, like, a record store to get, like, you know, bootleg records at the time, CDs, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I found one, and blah, blah, blah. And then you're walking down the street, and all of a sudden you realize you're the tallest person there. You know, and I'm, what, 5'8"?
Yeah. No, I remember the beds, and everything was small. Everything was small.
A taxi guy couldn't understand English. I'm trying to go baseball. I couldn't remember the name of the hotel.
Right.
And you're like I'm trying to go baseball. Yankees,
yes.
baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball. He called up the guy and they got me to the hotel, but it was, that was, uh, That was a wild time.
I was
a lot of soccer.
Oh, that was. Remember the airport and all that stuff. And they don't mess around.
Oh,
like
no.
There's no messing around. And you're supposed to fill out, when you have a lot of TV equipment, you're supposed to fill out this official paperwork before you go. We had one of the producers from the station just type something up, and I remember they stopped myself and Chris Elias, who was our producer and was traveling with, and it was like, where's your paper? And they were keeping us back. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Ooh. And finally, like, just go. And then he forgot he left his luggage on the thing, and he tried to come out and blah, 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 blah. But you know what did blow me away, Jay, when we went there? How big baseball is in Japan.
Yeah.
It's sumo wrestling and it's baseball. Because remember the first day that we were there, there was a practice. The Rays had a practice session, batting practice, the Yankees were even more popular, the Yankees. And I remember there was like 45,000 at the Tokyo Dome, and all kids. It was little leaguers. It was back like it was in the 50s where all these kids played little league and they let them all in. And then I remember it was being broadcast. I remember Giambi was hitting home runs, and I'm like, what's this? They go, oh, this is being broadcast live in the country. Practice. And remember how loud and how cheering and how they got into baseball?
Yeah.
It was really exciting.
I wish I could remember. I can't remember exactly how it was, but how when the Rays played, was it Nippon?
Yes. Nippon, yes.
And either when they were hitting, the crowd got dead silent, or when they were pitching, but they got dead silent so the players could concentrate.
They're very respectful.
When a player
would strike out on their team at the end, and it was quiet.
Yeah.
It would be like, there was no like, hey, you suck. Hey, blue, like poke a hole in your mask. Like, right. None of that.
Right.
Very respectful.
Yeah. That was, and what I did take two is, I remember, take away from that experience was how they had the nets all the way down.
They were way ahead of the game.
To the foul pole.
Yes,
and I
they
thought
did.
That is a great idea.
Yes.
Because to this day, I still go to a baseball game. I don't know how there's not at least one person killed every baseball game. With the screaming line drives in there and people on their phones. Or just, just put your, you drink your beer, you just put it down for a second. And here comes, I'm not surprised there's not at least one person killed every baseball game with a screaming line drive, coming into the stands. So I thought that, and at least now they're doing it a little more since that poor lady got hurt.
Yeah.
But I always thought that's a brilliant idea.
They were ahead of the game. They all, what was different too? I wonder what year that was. It wasn't in America. It was a long time ago.
1999?
That narrows it down. I don't know if it was that long. It was a long time ago. But they all had phones out and were taking pictures and video. And I was blown away by that. I'm like, are those cameras? No, those are their phones. Like, and they also, there was chains, they chain smoked. Though in the concourse, or if we went to any little place to eat. Remember that?
Right.
Like, other than that, they're very healthy.
Right.
But that was a little bit different.
Right.
And it was neat too, because we stayed at the same hotel as the Yankees and the Rays. And that doesn't happen in a regular season. Two teams are in different teams. And I remember Yogi Berra was on the trip. And I remember one time I was in a lobby and he just came down and he sat next to me. And I'm like, that's Yogi Berra. And he goes, how you doing? I said, I'm doing good, Yogi. How are you? I'm doing okay. And then I remember the late, great Don Zimmer. I remember when he came out. He used to be the bench coach prior with Joe Torre and the Yankees. Later, at that time, he was with the Rays. And I remember the crowds of people trying to get pictures and looking like, oh, like they knew baseball, American baseball history. And he was like Don Zimmer, a legend. And yet we would know him. Didn't you like Don Zimmer?
Well, it's funny. The first time, you got to know him, everybody, hey, Zim, hey, Zim, hey, On that trip to Japan, we took the bus from the hotel to the game. And it was a mix-up. The media bus, they didn't have one. So they said, you can go on the bus with the players to the game. But don't talk to them.
Right.
Don't look at them.
Don't even breathe.
I
didn't know this.
I get on the, and I sat in the second row. They said, you can sit here. Lou Piniella got in. He sat by himself in the front. Don Zimmer comes and sat next to me. I said, Mr. Zimmer, how are you, sir? How are you doing? And he starts talking about back in 1950-something, they came over here to Japan with the Dodgers, and they did a barnstorming tour. And he's like pointing out how to love baseball and how the Japanese love baseball, blah, 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 blah. And, he started telling me all these stories. And so I started, what about Don Drysdale. Was he, right, you know, right. What Dodgers, about Jackie Dodgers. Robinson?
Yeah.
And he goes, Jackie liked me for some reason. And well, I got along great. And what about, you know, Don Newcomb and all these pitchers from, you know, the Dodgers. And Duke Snider, you know, all these, you know, and he was telling me these stories and my mouth was just dropped. And before, I wanted that bus to go on for miles, you know, because I love talking old baseball.
Yeah, you're a history buff anyway.
Yeah, I love it.
And you
I
love baseball history.
And ever since then, when we came back, he always was very cordial to me and talked to him. And when I worked in the one radio station and I used to end my sign off with WDAE.
Yes.
Because the boss one time told me, oh, you don't say the call letters. I said, well, I'll show you. Oh, you know, like the old time radio, like WABC.
Is that why you sang all the time? Yeah. WDAE.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, WDAE. Okay. Oh, he told you not to say the call letters.
Yeah. But, yeah. And
so you sang it.
He said it. Yeah, so I sang it. And, it worked. And so Don Zimmer, you'd go to a press conference at the Rays, and all of a sudden you'd hear WDAE. And you look over, and he would come walking in. We had a new boss, and he told me not to do that anymore. I said, you know what? Don Zimmer loves it. I'm going to stop doing it. I said, well, you're going to go ahead and fire me. You know, go ahead. I think eventually he did. But
I had John McLaughlin on the podcast, and he was a former Buccaneer defensive end.
Right, I remember him.
2 years, that was it. He broke his hip. He told the whole story on the podcast, and he was a special team standout. He went to Notre Dame. He's like, oh. He had ADDAA. You can't concentrate. Can't focus.
I think you got it too.
Then he went to Cal. I said, oh, was that easier for you? He goes, no. Neither one. Even out of Notre Dame, Cal. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, and I wanted to tell him this on the podcast. We were in San Diego back 18 years ago when they had the Super Bowl. It was the Raiders and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I was covering it for local TV. Whitney was there for local radio. So we would hang out. It was a cool week. It was a cool week. Wasn't
great
it?
Week.
San Diego. So we were at different hotels. I was clear across San Diego, downtown San Diego. But a little younger then, a little bit more fearless. I'll figure it out. So I get a call. You're done with your work. I'm done with my work. I go over to your room. You had you and an engineer guy. It was a good dude. I don't know if you remember who it was. You remember that guy? He was a good guy. So you guys are there. We're pounding beers. We're done with the day for our thing. And I'm having a great time. And you even said to me, Rock, where's your hotel? Oh, pff. And we went out on your balcony and I looked clear across the gaslight district. And I said, I think it's down there. Aren't you worried? Nah. Then we get a call from the host of WDAE, Steve Dumig. And he had to stay later because you were just doing reporting work. And so he wanted to make sure that he came back and we'll have a beer with him or you with him because he's just going to come back to the hotel. We had already pounded some beers. I was thinking, I'm already ready now. Now I should start walking. Nah, we went downstairs. He came. He came out of a taxi. We had a couple more beers. And finally I said, all right, Jay, see you, man. You're going to be okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I hadn't even been in San Diego. There was no Google Maps at the time. So I start walking, and I'm walking, and I'm walking, I'm walking. I remember it got dark. I'm trying to find out where I am. Again, there was no internet. There was no cell phone. And I'm walking and walking and walking. And who do I, this bunch of young people are partying, guys and girls in a bar, and I look up, it was John McLaughlin. Now I don't know if he was activated or not for the Super Bowl, and I was just like, I can't even talk. I got to find my place. I'm going to keep on walking. And we reconnected after 20 years a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't have a chance to tell that story. But all in all, just some of the good times, man, that we had behind the scenes covering these teams. Right, well, Jay Burt?
If I remember that night because we were out on the balcony and you took off, and I could see you, I don't know how many floors up we were, 20 floors or whatever, and I see you walking down. I think you tried to yell. Maybe it was too high. And you're walking, and all of a sudden, from our hotel, you could look down the boulevard for, like, you know, miles. There's Rock. He's still walking. And then you're like, all right, he made the next block, and he's still going.
I don't know how we made it. Here's one other little story. You and I, when the Lightning played for 1 year, 2 years at what is now Tropicana Field. It was called the Thunderdome. And Terry Crisp, I believe it was Terry Crisp, or it was Jacques Demers, I think it was Terry Crisp, was the head coach. And so all we got to do is get sound.
Right.
That's called like get an interview. The coach says something. You got to get it on tape or get it on video. And I remember you were like, let's meet in the parking lot, man, instead of watching the whole game. And we would have a couple beers. We were listening to it on the radio. And I remember we had a couple of beers. It was time to go back in. We go down to Terry Crisp's office. And I remember I hit like the microphone that was set up like by the lightning and it went over and he went, what's going on here or something? What was it, my elbow or something?
You turned his phone on.
Is that what I did? I was so embarrassed.
We came back to my house because I'm only a mile from the truck.
Oh, that's what it was.
We watched the game on TV.
That's what it was.
And it's like 5 minutes ago, he said, Rock. We got the press passes. You know, we park right next to, we'll zip right in. We got back and we had a couple beers and Rock leans over to, you know, get his microphone by Terry Crisp. And he hit it, his elbow, hit the phone. And all of a sudden it just goes, he must have hit like three buttons at once. And it went like, and everybody's like, and that's when he goes. And then Terry Crisp goes, what the hell? And he looked over and he goes, and he just kind of, you know, calmly reached over and hit the, like the four buttons, five buttons that you hit off and continued with his press conference. That always made me giggle. I think of that often. It made me laugh.
Oh my God. Just one or two more. We can go all day with these stories. And I will show you on social media. We are in Whitney's backyard on a beautiful day here inside his shed, which is named, and he's got it, the Grateful Shed. And Grateful Dead Way, is that the sign that you have out in Grateful Way?
Shakedown
Street. His backyard is outrageous. I will show some of this on.
But it's looking like a mess now because
that's okay. You were thinking about
moving. We were going to move to Chicago to see the grandkids, and we decided we moved everything out of the house. And then we decided we were riding the baby wave because we wanted to see the grandkids. And then the wave hit the financial shoreline, and we said, wait a minute. Cost of living up there. Heat,
it was like
oil,
in Illinois,
snow,
the Chicago
taxes.
Area.
We're staying here, so we brought everything back. So that's why everything's in the shed
hey,
here
it's
now.
Beautiful. It's beautiful.
Let me start the lawnmower up here. Let's see how that sounds.
Oh, my God. There was another time where the former Lightning coach, we're going way back now, Jacques Demers, he really took a liking to Whitney. And was it the Rolling Stones? Who was it that played?
Oh, yeah.
Was that inside, like, what is now Amalie Arena, or was that at Ray J? But you got invited. Can you tell that story, Jay? You got invited.
Jacques Demers, the Lightning coach, came to our radio station and did an interview. And we were talking, and I think it was the first time I met him, I guess. Anyway, we were mentioning also, and that day they announced that the Rolling Stones were playing the Ice Palace in, like, a couple of months.
Wow.
You know, and we're like, wow. And I said, wow. I said, you know, coach, you're going to go see the Rolling Stones? Where are they playing? I said, they're going to play the Ice Palace. They just announced it today. He goes, and the way he said it, I can't do a Canadian accent, but he's like, I can't do it. Rolling Stones. and then I said, yeah, I love those guys. He goes, you want to go? And I said, yeah. He goes, you and a guest with me in my box. And I just met the guy.
That is incredible, man.
And he talked to the PR guy. He goes to him, you get this guy two tickets. And he throw it down. So lo and behold, Whitney for front office, I come by, there's two tickets for me to Stones. We go to the Rolling Stones, knock on the door, the box, some suite.
Oh.
Is it Jacques Demers there? And he goes, hey, night, glad you can make it, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, who else do you like? I said, the Allman Brothers. And the way he said, like, Allman, Allman Brothers. And he goes, let's get a beer. And he opens the refrigerator, there's no beer. He slams the thing, gets on the phone and goes, this is Jacques Demers. I want two cases of beer and my suite now. Bang. 2 minutes later, it comes all this beer, and we sat there. And so it's kind of goofy, but the guy, Chuck Laval, who's the keyboard player for the Allman Brothers, played with the Stones, has been playing them for years. So Mick Jagger announcing, and he's like, Keith Richards, and on keyboards, Chuck Laval, former Allman Brother. And Jacques Demers gets up and goes, he goes, Whitney, the Allman Brothers, the band. I go, yeah, man, that was it. But he was a great guy, and he was just a fantastic guy. And when the Lightning had their Stanley Cup run, and he came down and was doing stuff for, I guess, Canada national media. I got this, these people you deal with and you see them after a long time, you don't know if they know you.
Of course.
Just go, hey, how you doing?
And they've seen a thousand, hundreds of thousands of people right. over in their lifetime.
And he came, and I kind of, during a commercial, I just kind of waved, and he got up and he came over and he gave me, Whitney, how are you? How you been? You know, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, how are you? You know, and he was just a great guy. We've been very lucky. I think everybody, coaching wise, you know, looking down the road, I mean, everybody was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tony Dungy was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Gruden was phenomenal. You know, people always ask me about Gruden.
Right.
And I say, you know, the one thing I'll always remember is that after every practice, you know, he had his visor and he would come walking off, and there was always a kid there, either make a wish or, a kid in a wheelchair or, you know, and he would always take that hat off, autograph it, put it on the kid, take a picture, and then he would come over to us and start talking every practice. And I always thought that was pretty
cool. Thanks for, for bringing that up, man.
Yeah. It was very cool.
But it's just amazing to me, like on a first meeting, that these coaches would gravitate to you. That does not happen. I don't know if you remember this. There was a guy, he's a comedian in New York, and he had a late night show on drinking. He would go around the country. I forgot his name. He was hysterical, real low key. And he would just do shows on drinking late at night. And he came through Tampa Bay, and there was a guy, and I don't know where he was. Maybe he came to a game. It must have been. And there was a reporter in the town that loved his late night show. It's like a 1 o'clock in the morning show. Oh God,
David Tell.
Boom!
We met him in Japan.
Okay, but Carter Gaddis is a name because he must have been in Tampa Bay too. But do we meet?
In Japan. That's where I met him.
I wonder if Carter Gaddis was on that trip.
He was.
Okay.
It was in Japan.
I remember when Dave Attell was there, and I remember what you did, came over and told me, but I didn't remember. Isn't that funny how foggy, man? I have Anheuser's. It really did affect me.
The sake that night.
Okay. Oh. So Dave Attell is looking around, and he's looking. He's seeing the room, who he's going to get on his show, somebody he likes. And this Carter Gaddis was a big fan of the show. And Carter Gaddis went over and said, "Hi, Dave. Like, I'm a big fan. Can you put me on? I'd love to be on your show." And he's like, he talked to his producer and he looked over and he goes, "Nah, there's the guy. There's the guy that I want. My drinking show." And it was you. It was you. Seriously. And I think he had you on.
Well, you know, I think I was probably the only reporter that had long hair. And a beard, you know,
man, more to it.
I think, you know, looking back, maybe that's what it was too. I wasn't.
Oh my God, Dave
wasn't
Attell.
A cookie cutter.
Dave,
yeah, we did an interview that night. I remember that. I thought, I'm gonna be, because I loved that show.
That was hysterical.
I said, I'm gonna be on a show, and they cut it.
It was great.
Yeah, I never made it.
That
I
was
remember
great.
Watching it, never made it. But it was funny. But you know, I think it will, maybe this is it too. Now, just, I was the only reporter to have long hair. Right, I had a ponytail, had a beard. You know, I wasn't maybe a cookie cutter type of. Reporter with, you know, slick back hair or whatever. I don't know. But
long hair.
I started
so
going bald.
Great.
I started looking like the guy from The Simpsons, the comic book guy.
I hear you, dude. He's Whitney Johnson. He is a legend when it comes to sports talk radio. Thank you so much, buddy.
Great to see you.
We'll do it again. Hey, he's a character. Wasn't that good? Wasn't that good? How about some of those stories, huh? Letting it fly now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he had quadruple bypass, and he looks freaking fantastic. And he's working in the dispensary, medical marijuana field, in a dispensary as the host. He says, "Don't call me receptionist. That's not manly. I'm a host." So Whitney answers the phone. He's the first person you see when you go in this dispensary in St. Petersburg, Florida. He's got some great stories. I can't wait to have him back on. And I think it fits him perfectly. So, Jay Bird, I thank you, buddy. Thank you. A couple of things. Oh, Whitney, by the way, Whitney's a big NCAA March Madness guy. And for years, he would go every year with his older brother and a couple of buddies, his brother's buddies, and go to a remote area. It's called Citrus County. And they did it for years, camping out in a tent. His brother has this like camper. it's a nice camper. And I've gone on a couple of trips, and you play basketball all day and you party at night and you watch the two semifinal games. And it is outstanding, outstanding. And you don't play basketball hardly all year, and then you just play all day and you're so sore. So what I did was, I'm smart. They'll play like the day before, and then the next day, and then the semifinal game. No, I'm no dummy. I would play all day the one night, and then party that night, and then head out the next day, because I can't. I'm gonna be sore when you don't. You know, when you don't exercise. So he loves it. But you know what? I did the bracket. My brother-in-law, by the way, congratulations to my brother-in-law, Andy, who has just landed a major gig in the front office on Park Avenue with the NFL. And I could not be more deserving. He is a great guy, passionate worker. He worked at Disney. He worked in the Marriott chain. And he had a whole bunch of interviews, and he is like, it's Goodell, his boss, and him. And so he texted all of us in the family, my brother-in-law, and, hey man, let's do a bracket. You know, we'll have some fun. Summersworth fan, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Now, I haven't done a bracket in a while because he used to frustrate me. You know, the receptionist would beat me, and I was a sports guy at the TV station. And you always, you try to figure out a couple of upsets, and I'm like, but you know what? It is fun. And man, when Ohio State got beat, I saw that 95% of all ballots, brackets that were filled out, ballots, all brackets that were filled out had Ohio State winning their opening game, 95%. So right off the bat, boom, you're busted. I don't think anybody has ever got a perfect bracket. Is that's true, right? You would think that somebody in all the years. So, and it was just different this year. And then the VCU team, you know, they got the three COVID positive tests, and that they were done. And, you know, it's fun if you like it, but it's just, it gets frustrating. It really does. Once you get a couple of upsets and you're out, you know what I mean? So you do it for fun, and that is that. We're getting closer to some live events. I miss live music. I don't know about you. I mean, games are great. You know, it's nice to go to a baseball game and just chill with a hot dog and a beer. There's nothing like that. But I miss live music. I'm not talking about even big concerts, you know, baby steps. A friend of mine plays in a band. And I've been dying every day. He's a good dude. He's a great guitar player, Kirk. And I've been dying to see his band. And for the last year, you know, when they hit you up, like say it's on Facebook and, you know, boom, interested, going. I always hit interested. It always comes up in my reminder. And it's like something else always comes up. And then they're playing at smaller venues. And I know someone else that went and was like, man, it was so packed. I didn't want to deal with that. You know, so I mean, we're getting there. But like I say, the Rona stops here. I got my first one. I did get a tip from my neighbor. If you want to move your arm up and down after you get it, I know it might be an old wives' tale. One doctor told me it doesn't mean that much. I did that and I didn't feel any soreness, but they say the second one might be a little bit different. But where I went, it was great. I was trying like crazy. Oh my God, the lines. And I don't know where they were saying these turnouts are low. I tried going to Publix. Somebody said, go to Publix. And I'm like, you got any vaccines left over? I waited till like 7 o'clock, 7:30 when they close at 8. No, we don't have any. The girl that was working there was just so haggard. Can you imagine working in a pharmacy? Are you making much more than, you know, minimum wage? You know, you wait on customers to drop off or consult, you know, you work in a register, and now you got to deal with all these people, 40, 50 shots a day, you know, coming in. She just looks so haggard. I said, any extra COVID shots? She went, no. Well, should I come back the next day? And just walked away. I'm like, oh my God, she looks like she's been run over by a Mack truck. But where I went, it was efficient. It was outside in a parking lot in a tent. There was one lady, had her mom there, 84, 5 years old. Another guy came. One older guy. He had to be in his, I swear to God, 90s. White as snow, his hair. Skinny guy sits down. He's smoking a cigarette. And the young guy worker comes over. He goes, "Sir, you cannot smoke on this property. This is, and he, you can't do that." And the old dude looked at him just, "Huh? Hey, you cannot put that cigarette out." And I'm like, look at that. The guy's in his 90s. He's still, and he's getting yelled at. 90 some years old. He's not following the rules. It actually made me laugh. Another lady came over and she was sitting down. They space you out. And here's a tip. If you haven't gotten the vaccine, you're in line a long time. They gave us a number. And when they finally call you to get up there, once you get it, you still got to wait 15 to 20 minutes. They gave us a little timer. So don't think you get the vaccine, you walk out. So you got to figure that all out. But anyway, I feel great. I got one. They say it takes about 2 weeks to fully, work. And then 28 days or whatever, April 20th, I believe, is when I'm going to get, or something like that, when I get my second vaccine. Oh, I just saw something here. You see the UFC fighter, the girl that fainted two times when she was going through for the way out, some way in. Sometimes I got to cut that weight. I mentioned this on social media and I actually forgot to bring it up on my last podcast. I do have Anheuser's, as I've told you many times. I've worked hard to get that. But Marvelous Marvin Hagler had passed away recently, and I had the honor years ago when I was a national TV sports reporter. It was in New York. I was living in Jersey, but so when you're living in that area, either in the New York area or LA, you have access to so much more stuff and interviews and things like that, big press conferences, and there was some event going on where Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, and Tommy the Hitman Hearns were all at the same thing. I think I used to take this stuff for granted. And so I went there with a camera guy and sat down with Sugar Ray Leonard separately, Marvelous Marvin Hagler separately, and the Hitman Tommy Hearns separately. All three were great. And I'll tell you, Marvelous Marvin Hagler from Brockton, Massachusetts, was living at the time in Italy, and he was a movie star in Italy. And I remember he sat down with me and I said, "Marvelous, I'm a huge fan of yours, and we started the interview, and he had on this turtleneck. I'm not a big fan of turtlenecks, but he looked good. He had a turtleneck on, he had a jacket on. And he was so articulate and so refined. And he spoke, I said, "You speak fluent Italian?" "I do. Give me a little bit." And he spoke fluent Italian. And he was loving life. And he was just a perfect gentleman. But he was a beast in the ring. How about him and the Hitman? How about Sugar Ray? So it was just a great, great experience. I wish I didn't save anything. I mean, I don't even save pictures. I guess I should save a little bit more. But rest in peace, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. One other quick story as we're getting close to baseball season. Now, the Texas Rangers are going to allow full capacity. Texas has been pretty much wide open. Florida, we're pretty open here. But I just saw this last week that Al Leiter's son, remember Al Leiter? Al Leiter's been on MLB Network as an analyst. He was a pitcher 19 years in the bigs. Great guy. Great guy. He's from Jersey. And his son threw a no-hitter for Vanderbilt College Baseball over South Carolina. 16 Ks, 5-0 win. He is projected he could be the overall number one pick, Jack Leiter. Number one. Do you know how hard it is if your dad played in the bigs for 19 years and was good with the last name Leiter? You're always going to be compared to that. How hard is that? And number two, college baseball with the aluminum bat, ping, ping. Do you know how hard it is to pitch a no-no for freaking 9 innings in college baseball when they got an aluminum bat? That is incredible. And I got one little story with Al Leiter. When he was a rookie or his first year, he's with the New York Yankees. And he's a Jersey kid with the Yankees. And I remember we were, I believe at that time, the Yankees were in Fort Lauderdale. Because I used to come down every year for spring training, and we would hit all of Florida. We would drive. This is when I was in TV in New Jersey. And I remember being the Yankees were in Fort Lauderdale before they were in Tampa. And we had it set up with the PR guy. And I remember Al came over and he had such like a fun personality. And I've always said this. Anytime I would be at Yankee Stadium as a reporter or I would be at the Yankee Complex, whether it was Lauderdale or here in Tampa Bay, I always felt that Big Brother was watching me. That it was more, I don't know, the rules just over Mr. George Steinbrenner. I always felt that way. And Al was a kid, a young guy. That's how long ago this is. And we say, hey, Al, hey, man, we're from New Jersey Network. We're here to do, oh, yeah, great. And yeah, I'll I could do the interview here. Oh, no, you know what? I got to be careful. I'll talk to you in a second. Let me go run over here. Like he didn't want to upset the apple cart. You know, he was in pinstripes. And can you imagine he's a kid from New Jersey? He threw heat. Al Leiter threw gas. He was a lefty with a live stinking arm. And I'll never forget that. And just how fun loving he was, but also he didn't want to upset the apple cart. Like he's in a major league pinstripe Yankee uniform, man. A kid from Jersey that has made it. And just a great guy. Great guy. And he comes across like that on MLB Network, or I think he's done stuff for SNY, or no, Yes Network. Yeah. Great guy. All right, you know what? I think that's about it for today, peeps. Yep. That's what, so I got a couple of good guests coming up. I'm going to try to build this thing. And again, I'm going to expand a little bit, not just sports peeps. All right. Good luck to you. Have a good one. And I'll see you. This drops every Tuesday. And please subscribe, leave me a little comment, I appreciate that. The rock stops here. And for this episode, the Rona stops here.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
John Butler did not really believe in Michael Vick's sustainability in the league. But we were discussing, and I can remember him asking me in that trip, because the Purdue workout had been, I don't know, a week or 10 days before I had been to, when Drew Brees came out of Purdue. And he asked me, what do you think on Drew Brees? And I told him, like Drew a lot. Thought he'd be really good. You know, like most, had some concerns about how is he going to overcome his height, which you can overcome. And I thought the explosiveness, his foot quickness and explosiveness, was going to allow him to be successful on the next level. And I thought he'd be good. I didn't know about great, but I thought he'd be good. Well, he asked me, and I went into details, and I went over things and what I saw on tape. That's probably I think 15 minutes on it. Don't have time for that. But in essence, I talked about what I liked about him, how much I liked him. Didn't have a lot of concerns, and you know, didn't give and say, you know, where he would be on our board or what our intentions were or anything like that. I never was the type to do that. He shared for me, he says, I think Drew Brees is going to be one of the best quarterbacks of the upcoming era. I think he is not good, but great. Despite his height, I think he's the best quarterback in this draft, and I think he's one of the five best players in that draft.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.